Hello, you're listening to Radio Maria, England, and this is Father Toby with your word for today. And we begin today with the gospel from today's Mass, which is taken from Mark, and it's chapter 6, the beheading of John the Baptist. King Herod had heard about Jesus, since by now his name was well known. Some were saying, John the Baptist has risen from the dead, and that is why miraculous powers are at work in him. Others said, he is Elijah. Others again, he is a prophet like the prophets we used to have. But when Herod heard this, he said, it is John whose head I cut off. He has risen from the dead. Now it was this same Herod who had sent to have John arrested, and had him chained up in prison because of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, whom he had married. For John had told Herod, it is against the law for you to have your brother's wife. As for Herodias, she was furious with him and wanted to kill him. But she was not able to, because Herod was afraid of John, knowing him to be a good and holy man, and gave him his protection. When he had heard him speak, he was greatly perplexed, and yet he liked to listen to him. An opportunity came on Herod's birthday when he gave a banquet for the nobles of his court, for his army officers, and for the leading figures in Galilee. When the daughter of this same Herodias came in and danced, she delighted Herod and his guests. So the king said to the girl, "Ask me anything you like, and I will give it to you." And he swore her an oath, "I will give you anything you ask, even half my kingdom." She went out and said to her mother, "What shall I ask for?" She replied, "The head of John the Baptist." The girl hurried straight back to the king and made her a request. "I want you to give me John the Baptist's head, here and now on a dish." The king was deeply distressed. Thinking of the oaths he had sworn and of his guests, he was reluctant to break his word to her. So the king at once sent one of the bodyguard with orders to bring John's head. The man went off and beheaded him in prison. Then he brought the head on a dish and gave it to the girl, and the girl gave it to her mother. When John's disciples heard about this, they came and took his body and laid it in a tomb. I've always been fascinated by the psychology of sin before I even knew what sin was and what psychology was. As a child, I was a little too interested in crime, I think, and had a subscription to a magazine called Real Life Crime at quite a young age, which I think I might have mentioned before, and said that perhaps my mum should have been more worried than she was. But sin, like some of the crimes, is ultimately a mystery. And I'm not going to solve it in this homily, but it is a mystery which warrants some thought. Now, some suggest, like Socrates, that all sin is born out of ignorance. And there's something in this, especially if we think with an eternal perspective. Would anyone ever sin if they truly knew the eternal ramifications, and even perhaps the cosmic ramifications of their actions? But there's also an inclination to sin that goes beyond simple ignorance. There's the perversity of intentionally doing what is wrong. No lesser a saint than St. Paul writes, "I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate." Seeking to learn about the psychology of sin, mainly so I can stop doing it myself, I've learned something from psychology books, much from Aquinas, but probably nowhere more, I think, than in novels, and especially those of Graham Greene. In one of his books, which our interview with Father Gary Jenkins earlier today made me think of when he mentioned Sierra Leone, a book called The Heart of the Matter, the main protagonist of the novel finds himself stuck in a bind. In his wife's absence, he has struck up an affair with a much younger woman. And now, with his wife returned, he's got a big problem. He knows that when he goes to church with his wife, he cannot receive communion in a state of mortal sin. But he also knows that if his wife sees him not receive communion, she will start asking questions. And he knows that he can't go to confession because he doesn't have any intention to break off the affair. And that is the one thing he should do, to break off the affair. But he feels he cannot do it, even though he's not especially in love with the woman. And the reason he won't break off the affair is he's worried about what it might do to young Helen. He's worried that she might do something dramatic, something stupid, like commit suicide. And he starts to convince himself that he's a bit of a hero for living in this situation of mortal sin, when what he really is weak and delusional. Pride is the issue here. Pride is so often the issue when we dig deep down to why we sin. Scobie is so proud, he's convinced himself that Helen would not be able to live without him. Scobie is so proud, he's convinced that it's his responsibility to ensure that things turn out right, even if it involves breaking God's law. And that brings us to the sin of Herod in today's gospel. Because contrary perhaps to how we sometimes think of the story of the beheading of St. John the Baptist, Herod, though he calls for the beheading, does not want John dead. We're told, in fact, that Herod was afraid of John and also knew John to be a good and holy man and had given him his protection. We hear that Herod, when he heard John speak, was greatly perplexed, and yet he liked to listen to him. And yet he comes to order his execution. How does this come about? Well, you've just heard the story, so hopefully you remember, but I will recap. He makes a rash promise, seemingly overcome by lust. But lust isn't the worst of his problems. Lust doesn't chop off the head of John the Baptist. The problem is pride. Herod won't go back on a stupid promise. Herod doesn't want to be seen to break an oath. And so when Herodias, offended by John's words of truth, asks for the Baptist's head, Herod says yes. But how might this apply to us? What if we're sensible and never make rash promises to give people anything they want, including half our kingdom? Perhaps we don't even have a kingdom. Well, that's a good start not to make rash promises. But how much of our lives is dictated by what other people think, rather than what God says is good? I'm not saying be indifferent to the feelings of other people, but perhaps we all know the pride of wanting to be thought well of and being insufficiently discriminatory about who it is we want to be well thought of by. Or the pride of not wanting to stand out for the wrong reasons. The pride that stops us from taking a stand. The pride that sees me more worried about what my colleagues think than what God teaches. The pride that sees me carry on the gossipy conversation rather than be labelled a do-gooder. The pride that thinks it's more important that I be well thought of than be good.
Jesus, I pray, take all my mistakes, throw them away, destroy them for my sake. Jesus, I call out 'cause I'm sorry, because I fall so short of your glory. To the best of my ability, I'm practicing humility, and I lay myself before, 'cause less is more. Oh, pray, know what I'm trying to say. Just know what I'm trying to say. Jesus, I plead, please purify me. Make my heart clean. Drench me with your mercy. Jesus, I pray, I love you. For the rest of my days, I swear I will seek you to the best of my ability. I'm practicing humility, and I lay myself before, 'cause less is more.